Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Our article today is difficult, but it's fun and interesting. It's about new research that may unlock the secret of recovering the brain of your youth. So stay tuned. Well, welcome, everyone.
Happy birthday, Doris!
Hey, how'd you all know it was my birthday anyway? Well, you know, when you get older, you don't want to keep having birthdays. But after reading this article today, maybe my brain's still working a little bit.
Oh, it sure is. Come on. Faster than any of ours, right, Campbell?
For sure. Your brain is always working.
Well, thanks. It's good to have Josh and Campbell, and we're so happy to have our company nurse with us today. Stephanie.
Hi, everyone.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Doris.
You know, this is a medical article, and we need a medical person in for this article, don't you think?
Oh, yes.
For sure.
Some tough terms here, so glad to have Stephanie with us.
Josh, I wonder why we had such a hard article on my birthday. Well, anyway, let's celebrate after that. How about that?
It's to keep us
you
young.
You guys can
it's
take
to
me
help
out.
Us stay Good. Young.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and thank you all of you who sent greetings and cards and things on Facebook. Wow, thanks a lot. Okay. Well, our article today is on page 14, and it's called The Unstoppable Brain. Well, we don't want our brain to stop, do we?
No. We would like it to keep working our entire lives.
We don't want anything really to stop. We want to keep having fun. I'm still having fun and keep going, right?
That's right. I think it's important to keep your brain healthy, to keep your body healthy so that you can have a good life.
And there's a lot of articles about the brain, about the heart, about everything about our body. And those are called health. But I think it's also kind of – this article should be called – I think it should be called an article on neuroscience. What does neuro have to do with?
Oh, it's the study of the brain and of the electronic system in your body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's the study of the nervous system and how things work and how you learn things and how your body moves and connects and sends signals.
My oldest brother was a neurosurgeon, and he did a lot of operation on brains and things like that. But he's up in heaven now, and so he can't help me with this article today.
It'd be great to have him here.
Don't help us right now. But, you know, this article, I would say, is a very advanced article. I think it's a triple A, advanced article.
Yeah, I learned stuff from reading it, so yeah. Definitely an advanced.
So we better start digging into it, don't you think?
Yeah.
It's kind of hard.
Well, I don't think our listeners should be, you know, discouraged if these were phrases or topics that they weren't familiar with. I think we're all learning new things today, and we'll try to point out some words that perhaps you could use in your everyday English learning.
And if you're a nurse or a doctor or work in the medical profession, this might even mean more to you. But all of us need to know something about our brains because we need our brains all our life, don't we?
We sure do. And things are changing so fast. Mm-hmm. Stephanie, the courses you took in the brain might be even outdated these days, right? With how
fast
things
have changed.
Yeah, that
was like in 2008. many years ago.
Well, it wasn't that long ago. But we do have to keep up on the medical things as well as everything, don't we?
We sure do. The world is changing so fast.
Yeah.
So let's look at this article on page 14 and read the whole first section. This goes down through the second column.
The Unstoppable Brain. New research may unlock the secret to recovering the brain of your youth. Adults, especially parents, often find fault with the teenage brain. But they should admit that it is a powerful learning machine, and that sometimes the grown-ups wish they could recapture its nimbleness. New research, conducted by researchers at Yale University and published in the journal Neuron, homes in on the genetic and chemical mechanics that could make that possible. The new research, says the study's senior author, Dr. Stephen M. Strittmatter, helps point the way to therapies that might allow victims of stroke or spinal cord damage to set back their brain's clock to a stage of development that would foster the rapid relearning of lost skills. And, he added, it might aid those hobbled by post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, to reconfigure their relationship to painful memories and learn to live again.
Well, it's telling us here that adults, especially the parents, do find fault sometimes with the teenage brain. I'm not sure if it's with the brain, but just with teenagers in general.
Yes.
What do you think, Josh?
Yes, they can be unpredictable, hard to manage, hard to control, and their emotions and their hormones are all changing so fast that sometimes it does feel like their brains are out of control.
So when they find fault with them, that means that they are not pleased with the way they're acting and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They might wish they could grow up or get mature.
Right. And, stop
and they seem like
so
it, you know,
crazy.
Because they're grown up as far as their looks go. Maybe they're just as tall as they're ever going to be and they look like adults and everything. But they don't always have all that reasoning that adults have, right?
That's true.
Yeah, I think they're in the transition between childhood and adulthood. And so they're learning new things and they're trying to figure things out. And a lot of times they're insecure and unstable.
Well, it says that, you know, sometimes grown-ups, people who are through that teenage years, they wish they could recapture the nimbleness of the brain that the teenagers have. I never thought about our brain as being nimble. How would you use that nimbleness with this?
Well, I think the idea of being nimble or nimbleness means that you can do things quickly, you can move quickly, and in the case of the brain, you can learn things quickly, you can adjust quickly. So the idea of the brain being nimble and teenagers being nimble is just that they can absorb things and learn and shift and grow quickly.
I think we see that today with technology.
That's
teens
true. That
are
changes all the
just
time.
Involving and adapting to a changing technological world so
right.
quickly.
For sure.
I mean, they're the ones teaching their parents how to use a lot
That's
of technology.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very nimble on the technology as far as that part. They can learn it quickly. But new research comes out all the time on everything because we're always trying to think of new ways to do things, and we're discovering new things. And this new research was conducted by the Yale University. And, of course, you're always publishing the new research so everybody can read it. Mm-hmm. And this was in a journal called Neuron, which has to do with, you know, neurosurgery and neurology. Mm-hmm. And it homes in on – that just simply means what?
It means to zoom in on or to focus on a specific thing.
Right.
And here
right.
we're talking
about –
What are
they specifically honing in on?
About the genetic and chemical mechanics that could make our brains more nimble.
Stephanie, does that sound interesting to you?
That is a very fascinating research, I must say, because they're trying to – find out ways that makes it possible for grown-up brains to be nimble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think if you just think about the way a child learns a new language, how, I mean, my 2-year-old daughter now, right, she's constantly learning new things and she's absorbing things quickly. And I mean, if you've ever, as an adult, tried to learn a new language, there's no way you can learn it the way that a child learns it. Children learn things just so quickly.
We say that kids' brains are sponges.
Yes.
Yeah,
which means
they learn fast.
Soak it
right.
up. What's the opposite of a sponge? Like the adult brain is a rock?
A rock, that's what I was going to say.
A rock.
Seems like it doesn't right. Well, they're talking about genetic and chemical mechanics, things that are involved. So genetically is just what you're born with, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes,
and your
it
genes.
Has to do
say.
With your heredity.
And then chemical would be different ways that they can use things to change some of the genetics, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And there's some fascinating research being done on both sides of that, how genes can be identified in what causes, you know, degenerative diseases in the brain, and then what are the chemical imbalances and things that they can do to help restore brain activity. And
right.
that's what we're going to focus on today, mm-hmm. right? More the chemical side rather than the genetic side.
We're actually focusing on both in this article,
okay,
right?
According to Stephanie, mm-hmm. we're doing both.
I'm excited.
Right. Okay. But, you know, there's new research that was done by the senior author of this magazine, Neuron, Dr. Stephen Strittmatter. Boy, these guys have hard names. And he helps to point out something. What does he point out here, Steph?
He points out the way to therapies that might help or allow some of the victims of stroke or spinal cord damage to set back their brain's clock to a stage of development that will foster the rapid relearning of lost skills. So that's a mouthful.
Yes.
But I'm just going to break that down.
That's very important, though.
Which means this doctor, he actually is focusing on patients or people who have damaged their spinal cord or damaged certain parts of their nerves,
right,
and that he's trying to help them to set back the relearning part of their brain,
right,
to get back the normal function.
Well, see, that's what I think is so important about this article. Now, you might not understand everything involved, but here's people trying to figure out how to help. Maybe your mother or father have had a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
If maybe you're not that age yourself.
Right.
Or you all know somebody in your family. We all know people that are like this.
Yes.
And what can we do to help them relearn these lost skills? You hate to see people going around, they can't feed themselves and they can't do anything. You say, oh, if they could only learn how to do that.
Right.
So I think that's the key to why we have this article.
Right. So I think the idea is one of the results of stroke is often being paralyzed, right? So they're not able to move, they're not able to walk or feed themselves, as Doris said. Mm-hmm. So here the idea is trying to help them to learn these skills quickly again. So as a child, you learn it quickly within a few months, within a few years, you learn how to do these things. But often as adults, after suffering these strokes or spinal cord damage, you have a hard time learning again. So how can we help them to learn faster?
Learn to walk again. You see a baby falling down, but they're so small, they're close to the floor. When an adult falls down, it's different, isn't it?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like the word foster that we use there at the first paragraph of the second column. It just means to encourage, to introduce something, to move something along.
Mm-hmm.
We're hopefully fostering your English learning here on the advanced program.
That's right.
And so if you know people or there's somebody in your family, you might say, well, this might give us a little bit of hope. It might aid those people who are hobbled or who are, you could say, crippled by this, you know, that are hindered by this post-traumatic stress. Oh, I hear this word a lot. What is post-traumatic stress in a simple way?
Well, it's the fact that your brain has been injured, usually in some sort of accident or illness, and what are the results of that? And
what
so we have the word.
It? What causes it anyway?
Well, it's trauma, right? We see the word post means after some sort of traumatic event.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they've experienced some sort of traumatic event. They've seen some sort of traumatic thing, something really horrendous and terrible. And now they are crippled by it. They're unable to really function because every time they try to do something, they think about that event.
Well, if you watch the news at all, you see traumatic events every day.
Yeah, for example, an explosion. Building collapses, earthquakes, and all these families are affected when they see their loved ones died
soldiers,
or injured.
Right. Oh,
right.
The soldiers coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq are suffering from this.
That's true. Yeah, and it's interesting to note also that these people who suffered from PTSD, they will still feel fear even if they're not in danger, even if they're not in that dangerous situation anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could help them get over that, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah, so in this case, it would be about helping them to rewire their brain so they're not connecting certain triggers. You know, they hear a boom, and it might just be a car backfiring, and they start,
thinking they're in the war.
Yeah, they get crazy, you know. So helping them to reassociate different sounds and sensory stimulation with different events.
Huh. Well, no wonder they're working on it, you know, but it's not an easy thing.
No, it's not. And it's not easy for the soldiers because it's almost like this hidden disease that they're suffering. And I've read some interviews with soldiers who said they'd rather have lost an arm or a leg because that would be just easier for people to relate to and understand.
Yeah.
It's really paralyzing. I mean, even when my daughter was in the hospital, for 4 months, after she came out, we would constantly hear different sounds and that would remind us of our time in the hospital.
You know? So that was kind of a post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, I mean, not to the extreme of, being in war, but still, we would hear sounds and we would automatically associate it with being in the hospital, and it was just a very negative association.
And so if they could figure out some way to relieve that, they reconfigure the relationship to these memories. So you have these memories, but you don't have that terrible feeling that goes with it. You're released from that. Mm-hmm. You don't have to live through it again. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah, I think it would be freeing, and well, it would help them a lot.
Good luck to them, you know. Live again. So right. This is kind of what we're talking about. Is there any way to help our brains, help us get over these terrible things that happen to us? And, of course, everything is aging. Your body is aging, and that's why you're supposed to keep exercising and keeping your muscles going. But how do you take care of your brain? So let's talk about the aging brain and read the next section to the bottom of this page.
The aging brain. In response to the world around it, the adolescent brain is a marvel of regeneration, wiring and rewiring itself constantly as its owner learns and refines the motor, social, and perceptual skills that will form the foundation of his or her adult behavior. Having lived through these wonder years, the adult brain becomes a bit, shall we say, plodding. Its cells continue to sprout the axons and dendrites that lash neurons together in a process we call learning. But there's nothing like the mad recreation of brain architecture, the constant replacement of existing neuronal connections and their replacement with new ones, that characterizes the teen brain.
Well, I guess the adolescent brain is great. It says it's a marvel of regeneration, of wiring and rewiring. I always think about teenagers is learning by experience. They do something wrong at school and they get punished for it and say, oh, I won't do that again. Or socially they do something. Mm-hmm. Just like a little kid, a little baby, they'll touch the stove and it's hot and then they'll rewire and they won't do that again, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they're learning by the things that they go through and the things that happen to them. Isn't that right?
That's right. We call it a marvel of regeneration in this case for the teenage brain.
And so they're trying to figure out how we can do this with people who are not at that age anymore. But it says that the teenagers form these things in their teenage years that are the foundation of their adult behavior. That's why I think it's so important to not only have physical exercise in high school, but moral teaching too, because mm-hmm. If you teach people it's okay to lie or cheat or get away, that's going to be formed in their life.
Right.
And it's pretty hard to rewire that in the future.
Definitely.
So I think it's very important for kids to learn morals before they get out of school.
Life skills, life principles, how to make good decisions.
Right.
Exactly.
I think all of these form who we become later on, and it's often time, it's hard to unlearn.
And that's why teachers are so important, not only the subjects that they teach, how they teach it, the morals, the standards. In the past, teachers had to be people of very high moral, ethical position, or they'd lose their job at the school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid it's not true nowadays.
Well, it's still true here at Studio Classroom, though, right?
No, Studio Classroom.
how we choose our articles.
That's right.
We could definitely talk about pop culture or entertainment all day, but
yeah.
What would that really be doing?
Right.
To build life skills.
So we have to realize that these things are important because what you learn, what you put in, is what you become.
Mm-hmm.
What you do today, you're fast becoming. What you think today becomes the way you are.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and this idea of the rewiring and the wiring, I think what would help if you think of your brain as like a machine, as we said earlier, just the idea that, you know, machines have a lot of wires that connect it to other things that help it to run. Your brain is that way. And as you're learning, you create new connections. So, for example, like my daughter, she was born premature. She was born early. So she has some brain damage that in the area that controls her motor skills. And right now we're going through therapy to help her to learn and to rewire the brain to connect it to other parts that would be able to help her to control her motor skills.
Well, what kind of therapy would help a child do that?
I think what they do is they stimulate her, they give her a lot of stimulation, and through the stimulation, her brain makes new connections. And that way, then she learns how to use her left hand more, because right now she doesn't like to use her left hand. You know, she prefers her right hand in an unhealthy way. I think we all use one hand over
bit.
The other.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
she overly uses her right hand. Mm-hmm. So right now we're trying to rewire through therapy, through stimulation, through playing with her. And that helps her to learn how to use her left side more.
It's pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's a
and
great way
sure
to put it.
And I'm sure you'll see a lot of improvement
mm-hmm.
that way, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen some improvements?
Oh, for sure, for sure. And they say you need to do it before a certain age because before that age, you know, they learn really quickly.
Right,
right.
Yeah. So you tie her right arm behind her back?
Sometimes. And she fights me. I have to hold her down.
Good thing she's only 2 years old. Then. You know, but sometimes our adult brain, we think kind of slowly. So it's sort of like plodding along or just sort of like going along in a very difficult way. Plodding just means to go through something, like walking through the mud. It's not like walking on the solid ground.
Right. Something done without any imagination or enthusiasm. And that's what the adult brain becomes, it says, a bit. After we've lived through the wonder years, which
right.
is a fun term for our glorious childhood, right?
Right.
We only remember the good things that
yeah.
happened.
I'm ready to call on Stephanie again because in line 15 it's talking about the cell sprouting axons and dendrites. That's not really in my vocabulary, and so I'm going to call on a medical person for that one.
It's your birthday, so we'll let
okay.
you skip
you can
it.
Call on anyone you want.
Come on, Steph, tell us about that
right. one. There's a few keywords there. One is axons, one is dendrites, and the other one is neuron. Neuron is the basic building block of brain cells. We call it the nerve cell. So imagine there's one big nerve cell, and then an axon is a long branch that branches out from this nerve cell. And what does it do? It brings messages out from the nerve cell.
Now, are those the ones that get the messages in your brain? Like they say, when people have Alzheimer's, the brain, the information's there, but they can't get it out. So are these axons the one that get the brain?
They similar,
get the, they
right.
go in and get mm-hmm. it out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like a computer, you got to get the information out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You yeah. think of it as hands reaching out
yeah.
to other people,
okay.
trying to connect to other people. They're like hands reaching out to other cells.
Are they
cells.
Like the dendrites the same
right.
way?
Dendrites, no. Dendrites, they also branches out from the nerve cell. They look like trees. Trees branches, and they receive messages from other cells. So it's receiving.
They receive the messages and axons.
And passing on.
Deliver them.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting.
Exactly.
Huh? I'd like to see a little cartoon on that. That would help.
I'm sure there's some
right.
good diagrams.
Yeah, right.
Google dendrite. And, I'm sure
and they lash these neurons together, and then we call this learning. So they get the information in, they put it together. You know, when people get older or they're beginning to lose their thinking processes, you can talk to them and they hear it, but they can't put it together. Mm. So there must be something wrong with these axons. Dendrites, you think?
Yeah, I think, and then as you were describing that, you know, it's like when you listen to a foreign language that you don't understand. You don't have those connections.
You hear
so
the
you're
words,
receiving
you can't
the sounds,
it,
but
yeah.
you're not understanding with the words.
Right, and that can happen to people when their brains get muddled or something, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. So they try to recreate, you know, the brain architecture, and how do they do that?
Well, through the constant replacement of existing neuronal connections. So I think we're using the word neuron and adding AL to it makes it an adjective describing the types of connections in your brain.
Okay. Oh, wow. Well, we'll have to see. This is what the teenage brain is. But let's go ahead and find out how these mental maneuvers, how they can these things can move around, these axons, the dendrites. Let's read about that paragraph.
Mental maneuvers. The Yale team focused on a gene that programs for the production of a central nervous system protein called NOGO receptor 1. Earlier research had established that NOGO receptor 1 stimulates the growth of connections between neurons, and that when it is plentiful in the brain, mice do not recover as well from brain and spinal cord injuries.
Well, we just got a couple minutes to dig into this protein thing, but let's start it today and we'll talk about it more tomorrow.
So we have this big word again, NOGO receptor 1. What actually is this? This is a protein in your body that has connections with your central nervous system, which is your brain system, your nervous system. And what does it do? It's a receptor. So it receives messages. It receives chemical And when it receives it, it connects like a key and a lock. Think of the receptor as a lock and the chemical as a key. So when it connects, something happens.
Hmm. Good analogy.
I think so. You know, I guess we should all need a little medical training now and then, don't
we? Right.
Especially to understand articles like this.
That's right. Well, you know, I never understand all the things that proteins do anyway. They always say, well, you need protein, and you get protein in meat and things.
Yes,
peanuts,
meats and eggs and
cheese.
Fish, all sorts of things. But
so you need proteins, but there's different kinds of proteins. How many? Are there a lot of kinds of proteins?
A lot. Many.
Okay,
yeah.
So we don't want to go into that right now.
No.
Right.
But this is one, and this is called NOGO receptor 1. Did you learn about that when you were in school or not?
No, actually, we did not go in depth on it.
Didn't
this is
get into
really
that
in
much.
Depth study of the brain.
Mm. Yeah. So, you know, this is kind of deep medical
stuff. You said
it's
AAA.
Yeah,
advanced.
But what it does is it stimulates the growth between these connections, which is pretty important. If one of them gets a message and one takes them around, they need to keep connected well. And so when they have a lot of that, it says mice do not recover well from brain and spinal cord injuries. I don't understand why they don't. If these connections are good, why don't they recover?
We have to slowly dissect this part. Okay. If you think about NOGO receptors, it's present in adult brains. Mm-hmm. A lot of NOGO receptors in adult brains. Why? It's a normal function in our lives where when your young brain goes into an adult brain, you need the NOGO receptor to stabilize your thought processes, which means whatever you learn when you are young, when you grow up to be an adult, your brain needs these NOGO receptors in order to remember or hold on to whatever values or teachings that you have acquired when you were young. Mm. So it's a normal growing up process to have NOGO receptors plentiful in your brain.
Mm. Okay, and if you don't understand all that, you can ask Stephanie on Facebook.
That's right.
Give her the questions,
you may.
Okay.
We're going to talk more about it tomorrow.
Okay, so we'll see you tomorrow when we finish this about the unstoppable brain. Keep your brain working, and let's go out and celebrate.
That's right. Happy birthday.
Okay. Happy birthday.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.